This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. Liverpool are out of the Champions League, Spurs are out of the Champions League, and Arsenal should be playing in the Premier League this weekend. Hi, gang. My name's Marcus. That's Luke, and that's Jim.
Hello.
Hello.
You gave you afforded yourself a little pause in the intro then. You were so confident with what you were going to say. You're not packing as much in, I've noticed.
It's that pause, which I assume, I'm assuming and trying to remember what they call in Argentina, la pausa.
Yeah,
where,
okay.
Where the sort of, usually it's the number 10 playmaker. It's that. It's very Riquelme. You think Riquelme.
Riquelme was basically a big pause.
He was.
Jim Marcus is
the Harold Pinter of football.
Jim Marcus is a bald paused.
Where it's that moment where the number 10, he's got the ball and he sort of shuffles around and then he puts his foot on the ball and just waits.
Yeah.
He waits for the run and then plays the pass.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what I was doing, of course, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Intro.
We all got that.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. I didn't get it, but now I do, and I really appreciate you explaining it to me.
Yeah. Channeling the spirit of Argentinian football there. It's been quite the week for football, on and off the pitch. An obvious place to start is possibly what most of us have been talking about, was, of course, Sven's performance on Monday Night Football on Sky Sports.
Yeah, I didn't actually see it, sadly. But
what?
Sorry about that. Can we still be friends and colleagues? is that the straw that broke the camel? Is that the Sven that broke the camel's back?
Charming bastard that he is.
Well, yeah. I did see some clips. I saw some other bit. I like the fact that he's completely unrepentant.
Oh, my goodness.
About pretty much everything.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's glorious. See, the thing is, and I talk more about this on one of our new little bites on Patreon for those who subscribe there. But the thing is with Sven, people often mistake that they think I like him because he was this great England manager, because he wasn't a great England manager. He was all right.
He was kind of par, right?
Yeah, he was par. Yeah. I mean, really, with those players, he completely mismanaged the midfield, as he still would, apparently, according to his England team, because he'd still have Gerrard and Lampard in there who say, right, I think they should still play together.
But with
they could.
No, but more importantly than that, still with Paul Scholes on the left.
Yeah.
And this wasn't from his own era, was it? Wasn't this like...
This was his England, best England. This would have been his... I don't know.
Because he had Joe Hart in goal. And did Joe Hart ever play on the Spen?
It would have been players that played under him, right? But didn't he have Joe Hart at Notts County randomly?
Right.
Not Notts County.
Man City.
Not sure.
He might have been knocking around. Anyway, Joe Hart,
he plays by his own rules.
Indeed. But it's more the fact that despite all that, you just cannot... hate the man. He's so like...
Depends, doesn't it? If he's disrespected your vows or not.
Well,
shall we say.
I'm sure there are people out there. Although, for more of that, read his autobiography.
Yes.
Yeah.
But anyway,
if you yeah, he played for him under
at Manchester,
Manchester City. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I mean, not to count, I was getting confused between Kasprzyk Michael.
Yeah, there.
I mean, but the Paul Scholes thing's really interesting because I don't know if you guys have ever seen an interview you did with Gary Neville where he said, it's a bit of a myth about him being farmed out on the left as to why he didn't really enjoy playing for England at that point and why he retired early. The reason he said is because. He said, in my own opinion, my performances were absolute trash and I didn't deserve to be in the team, but they kept picking me and they wouldn't stop picking me. Mm. And my performances were nowhere near good enough and I knew it, but no one would stop me playing. So I had to take it into my own hands, is effectively what he said.
Which is a mad thing to say.
And Gary Neville in the interview said, do you actually believe that? Because you were really good. And he was like, no, trust me, I was nowhere near good enough.
That's almost like the reverse Joe Hart.
Yeah.
But the thing is with Scholes, I mean, I've said it before, there's this myth among some... A minority, we'll call them, of Manchester United fans, where he was grossly misused by England, despite playing in his preferred position in three tournaments. Yeah, prior to
and
that.
He played on the left for United all the time.
Well, yeah, but
he could cut inside and do all this business then.
I think he probably only played about 6 or 7 games for England on the left.
Yeah,
which is probably about, I don't know, 8% of his England career.
Well, I think he though was the headline of the fact that there wasn't a left-footed human being in England for 10 years.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because he was the headline.
But if Sven Pickford on the left,
Troop Pettway happy with this for the Premier League show?
There's nothing much else going on in football at the moment, is there? So
I mean, even a review show, this would be taking a piss, wouldn't it?
It would. Maybe you should do what's Goals has done here and remove yourself from the Sven chat.
Well, all right, let's change that because we're
you should recuse himself, shouldn't you?
We're sort of reviewing Sven's performance on Monday.
Are we?
Let's.
I can't even remember what the game was on Monday.
I see it.
Let's preview then. What do you think Sven's going to get up to this weekend? Will he be watching Everton
Will he
versus...
will be involved.
Yeah.
Will he be watching Everton versus Liverpool?
Probably not, but we will.
Yes.
So let's start with that.
Uh-huh. I feel it's a jumping off point to talk about Liverpool and Atletico Madrid. An extraordinary night of
football. Absolutely extraordinary. Yeah.
That's just Michael Owen.
I mean, obviously Atletico beat the 3-2 after its time on the night, 4-2 on aggregate. But that in itself is the fact that Atletico Madrid... won the game
on the night. Absolutely astounding. Like we were talking about this earlier, Marcus. I don't know if you agree with this, Luke, but like with the second goal, with Marcus Llorente's second goal, I felt those defenders backed off of him so much that it was almost like the narrative of the game had got into their own heads. It was like they were going, all right, we're attacking and you're defending. I know you're just keeping the ball up the pitch now, so we're going to back off you a bit until we can like comfortably win it back and get it out. And because they gave him that space, he was like, I'm just going to have a dig here. Mm. And obviously Adrian's, you know, unsettled. And
he had a poor night, actually.
He really did. Yeah. But it got in his head, and that's the danger of unfortunately, that's part of the reserve keeper's lot, isn't it? That you don't play a lot and then you're called upon. But
do you know what it felt like to me? And this is not scientific, and you guys might sort of laugh me out of town here.
Well, football's not really scientific, is it?
Well, it depends who you ask, doesn't it?
Well,
you don't say that on your Jonathan Wilson show, you liar.
Yeah. I say whatever he says.
Yeah. I agree with Jonathan. Right, should we do something else? Yeah. No, it felt to me that Liverpool had such an idea in their own mind that Atletico were going to come to defend. Mm. They didn't need to worry about the threat that Atletico might score.
Yeah.
Is that what you were sort of getting at?
Effectively, yeah. And I think that the Marcos Llorente's second goal was the epitome of that, because it was like they didn't take seriously the idea that he might even shoot. And in doing so, they gave him the space to do that. And obviously, he still had a lot to do, but it was, you know, a lot went wrong for Liverpool in terms of those crucial moments.
Mm. Well, I mean, you'd have to say that, given that Marcos Llorente is now 25-year-old footballer who has made a career essentially of not scoring goals.
Yeah, he couldn't believe it.
No one could.
The second one, it was like, it was almost like, like he'd found 20 quid on the floor.
Yeah.
And like the face he made was like, you find 20 quid on the floor and you like, you make eye contact with someone in a car and go, a bit of luck.
You look around and you think,
is anyone seen me?
I think I'm okay to take this.
I would take it and go.
There's not an old woman whose sort of handbags are perilously open in, you know, 10 feet in front of me.
No, I would take the £20 note and really ostentatiously shout to everyone, does anyone know where the local police station is? And when I was pointed in that direction, I'm off there now.
Yeah,
and as soon as I got around the corner, I'd leg it.
Yeah.
To be fair, I think even if that little old lady's handbag was open, Atletico Madrid are the exact team that would go, yeah, we'll have that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought people on social media, as they will, was kind of having a bit of a dig at Klopp, going, oh, you know, why is he having a go at the way Atletico Madrid played and so on? And that is a fair accusation, because there are many ways to win a football match. However, I don't want to give Klopp different treatment, because if it was Mourinho, we'd obviously laugh at that, but they are very different men. But he's trying to make sense of what happened. And how Liverpool are not through to the next round of the Champions League is beyond me.
Did you see that footage of him walking up the tunnel to the fans?
Ah,
yeah.
Put your fucking hands away, you idiots. That's one of the highlights.
It was really good. What a way to start a quite truly baffling evening.
But he did also say that he wondered why Atletico don't play football in a slightly different way given the players they've got.
Well, Andrew Brassel has said this for a couple of years on the continent, hasn't he?
Yeah. But we said this after the first leg, and it was mentioned by David Cartledge on the continent a week or two ago. Atletico, according to him, he's a Spanish football expert, are capable of putting together these greatest hits performances. And if you don't watch them very often, which most people don't, you go, oh, wow, Atletico's still really good at that.
But
apparently they're not that good generally.
I don't think this was one of them, though. I don't think this was that, you know, you remember that Atletico side who went to the final in Milan?
They've won the game 3-2, so it would suggest they're not. Yeah.
When they went to the final and were beaten on penalties in Milan by Real Madrid, if you look at that side, you know, they were magnificent, you know, winning 1-0 and then closing it down. This, I mean, it was almost in some way a tale of two goalkeepers. I mean, Oblak is imperious.
He was excellent.
He's probably the best goalkeeper in the world at the moment, one could argue. But they did ride their luck a bit. I mean, Liverpool could have won that game, say, 2-3, 0. I mean, they probably should have won it in the 90 minutes. I understand Atletico Madrid defended very well and it was a complete onslaught, but they did ride their luck. There's no two ways about it. Whereas
Liverpool had 34 shots.
Yeah, there you go. Whereas previous Atletico sides that have gone to the final and have gone deep in this tournament, I wouldn't say they did ride their luck. I would say that they actually were magnificent and didn't give away anything. Whereas at Anfield, that's why I can't believe Liverpool went through and why Klopp was trying to make sense of it. Because they were good defensively, Atletico, obviously, and they've gone through, but I think that they had a bigger slice of luck than actually in previous seasons when they didn't need any luck at all, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, completely. But the thing is, I think with the way Atletico play as well, you're right to say that Klopp is trying to just sort of fathom it in his head. Most teams, if you put them under the cosh that much, then they're going to crack at some point. Like, something won't go their way. A clearance will fall to the wrong place, which it seems to every time anyway. But just whatever will happen.
Well, the bar as well.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. I mean,
like
actually, Liverpool's goal was a rare lapse from Atletico to leave Wijnaldum in that amount of space. But and then they just didn't do it again. But the thing is, you know, most teams don't like being under the cosh. Atletico, they live for the cosh. Yeah. They caress the cosh.
They love it.
They
up
stroke
them.
The cosh.
Careful,
they are
Mark.
So at home under the cosh.
Don't make it obvious, Mark. We want people to read between the lines. Jim's trying to imply stuff.
Exactly.
We don't know what the guys chatted about yesterday on the content, because at the time of recording, we haven't actually heard it ourselves. So we can't sort of legislate for what they've said. But I agree with you, Jim. I think occasionally this type of stuff does happen if you're playing in these kind of knockout high intensity games. But Graham Asso once said that, I remember him saying that when you set up as a team to just try and nick a goal and win a game like that, and he was talking about it in the context of struggling Premier League teams. So what's often not mentioned is the pressure that puts on the defensive players, because the defensive players think, right, we know our striker. I mean, it's not said, but we know our strikers, in this particular case, aren't good enough. They ain't going to score more than 10 goals a season, so we've got to be perfect. And it puts an unbelievable amount of mental pressure on you. Whereas with Atletico, you think, well, they've got €100 million forward in João Félix playing. And Diego Costa has won like pretty much everything.
Morata off the bench.
Yeah,
as well.
And so why do they feel like they have to play at that? Well, I guess probably because that's how Diego Simeone sees football and that's how he wants to play.
Did you see Diego Costa in the mixed zone?
Yeah, horrendous.
Incredible.
Levels of shithousery that I didn't think were achievable.
Oh, sorry, no, I thought you meant as he came off and the fans were basically just laughing. What are you doing in the mix zone?
As he walked past all the journalists in the mix zone, starts coughing on the ball.
Wow.
That's what I mean.
Wasn't he pretending?
He was pretending.
He was fake coughing so he didn't have to give the interview, basically.
That's just unbelievable.
I mean, that is really
it's
something.
It's very, very poor taste.
Seriously.
And I think he should be absolutely deplored for doing it.
Yeah.
Can I actually put forward a bit of praise for BT Sport as well?
Oh, right.
In that one, if
what are you after?
Giving Michael Owen something to do.
Doing a comedy festival.
Well, there is so much football media now that a lot of different broadcasters try to recreate different spaces in which you watch football. And I think by having Steve McManaman as co-commentator for a Liverpool game, they really do recreate that feeling when you're in a pub and there's a really biased Liverpool fan sat near you.
You sound like Jose Mourinho now, Jim. But yeah, so, I mean, we asked this question, I think on Monday, was it, has this taken the shine off Liverpool's season?
Well, I was looking at what Arsenal were able to do in their invincible season.
Say it, baby. Say it.
They got 90 points. They got to the semi-final of the FA Cup and the League Cup. And obviously, they won the league undefeated. And they got to the quarter-finals of the Champions League.
Beaten by Wayne Bridges' Chelsea.
Yeah. Liverpool this day. Liverpool this season. And we've had our debates about the Super Cup and the Club World Cup, which obviously Arsenal didn't compete in that season. Mm-hmm. So it's not fair to kind of compare them. So we'll put those to one side. They've got to the round of 16 in the Champions League, the quarterfinals of the EFL Cup, and the, you're right, Jim,
yeah,
and the fifth round of the FA Cup. So they're underperforming against Arsenal's team in that year on the cup side of things, and they need to get above 90 points to do better than them in the league, and they're not going to be invincible. So it does feel a bit like they're drifting now by their own high standards, by their own very high standards, of course. I think that the joint record for winning the season early, I think, is 5 games to spare, which they could easily do if City lose this weekend.
It's only 5 games?
I think so, yeah.
That's surprising, isn't it?
I thought Manchester United had it sewn up in like end of Feb 1 year.
No, that's not happened, apparently.
Right, okay.
Yeah, apparently not.
It just felt like... this is quite a common thing, though. Like, you get insight and then you slack off a little bit.
Yeah, right? Maybe.
But when you ask the question, has it taken the shine off? I think it depends what your expectation was for them when they were doing really well. Because it depends whether you think they could have sustained it or whether you just think, okay, well, look, you know, let's wait and see.
For me, it will be a case of when they get over the line, there will be a massive celebration, as there should be. Yeah. Hopefully public gatherings will, well, whether they're allowed or not, I'm sure that Liverpool fans will do it. And I think maybe in a couple of seasons, 2 or 3, then people will look back and see the magnitude of what's happened.
Yeah.
I think people are aware of the magnitude of what Liverpool have done this season in the Premier League. But just because of those recent results and the way it will kind of sort of peter out the season, obviously, because they've been so good, and they probably will get that record, Luke, as you say. I think maybe in like a couple of seasons people will go flip your neck.
Marcus, I really don't think it'll even be a couple of seasons. I think we're in a weird situation now where there's this sense that the sheen has been taken off of it. And that is purely because we're in an unusual situation where there is absolutely no doubt about them winning the league. Mm. Of course they're going to win the league. And at this stage of any season, that's quite an unusual thing. And for that reason, it just seems a little bit less exciting, doesn't it? We're just waiting for them to be crowned. Like, there's no way they're not going to win it. So normally, you've got an exciting run in as a bit of a will they, won't they? You know, there's some level of doubt, but there is just absolutely none here. So we can't take away... What an achievement that is from them, that they've sewn up the league in March.
Like, will it take away a bit more of the shine if Everton beat them on the weekend?
I think that is certainly a...
Can I just add one final point, just so to make it completely fair, really, Liverpool. I mean, it's going to be their first league title for 30 years. When Man United won the first league title in 93, since the 60s, it wasn't seen as, oh, well, they should have done more.
Exactly.
It was like this is the first title they've won in such a long time. This is really important. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, another however many years later, they end up winning the treble. I'm not saying that it's easy to sustain such a legacy. But in that season, they got to the fifth round of the FA Cup, the third round of the League Cup, and they were knocked out in the first round of the UEFA Cup in 92-93. But what was important for them was to win this league for the first time in such a long time. 26 years it was, I think.
Well, so I suppose for Liverpool,
that's what's important for them at this point.
Yeah, but
if they see it as a start of a journey, rather than domestically, rather than the summit of one. Then they could hopefully replicate and win a few more.
Well, and it shows you as well with what Klopp's been doing, because they won the Champions League last season. So you go into this season already as European champions and so on. So you look at Klopp's time as a whole, probably that would be more accurate rather than just this season.
And I think it is worth pointing out that if Everton fans want to get angry about us essentially on paper previewing Liverpool v Everton and not really mentioning Everton at all, I would advise them to go back and watch the highlights of their 4-0 defeat to Chelsea and say, feel free to revisit that, because if I was an Everton fan, I wouldn't fucking want to.
No. Yeah, I don't think there are highlights if you go to that as an Everton fan, really.
No.
Mm-hmm. It was poor, wasn't it? And actually, to be fair, though, I mean, there's been a lot of draws in this particular fixture, Everton-Liverpool at Goodison recently. So, I mean, they could... The trend would suggest that they might make Liverpool wait a little bit longer, and they've got to respond after that after that performance, right? Because it was uncharacteristically bad of Ancelotti's
it was,
Everton.
Yeah, it was. Do the other players at Liverpool hate Mohamed Salah? Mm. There seemed to be a lot of needle last night. Maybe it's just because they were losing, but it just seemed like there was a lot of sort of crossed words between some of the players and Salah. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Do a lot of the Everton players hate Theo Walcott?
Where's that come from?
It would seem unlikely.
Does anyone hate
Jim
Theo
does. No, yeah. You do, Jim.
No, I do not.
Jim doesn't hate anyone.
No, I don't.
Apart from...
Carlos Tevez.
Yeah. Carlos Tevez, yeah.
And Pete. And, according to our Reddit.
Oh, it's Jim now, it's not me.
I think it rotates.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They basically hate me consistently, yep. And they think that you hate each other all the time.
Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah. That's probably accurate, I'd say. Yeah.
They're good judges of character, can I say.
Yeah, I think Everton, go back to your earlier point, Jim, I think Everton would bite your hand off for a draw in this game. So they've got to respond. They do have to respond, of course, after that piss-poor performance against Chelsea. Let's move on to Brighton versus Arsenal. Arsenal obviously meant to play Manchester City this week, but the fixture was called off. It's very worrying times, of course. In the wider context, is far more worrying. Yeah, and obviously people losing their lives for crying out loud and so on and so forth.
I don't think it's our job to show leadership on this incident in the Ramble studio, though.
Indeed. But in terms of the football, it is... Yeah.
Let's stick to one thing that we're not experts on.
Yeah, football, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But apparently Brighton versus Arsenal is going to go ahead.
Yeah.
We want football to be played, but obviously, you know, in a safe space. With Arsenal, though, have you... Mikel Arteta, Jim, he seems to be sort of cracking the whip there. Yeah. Maitland-Niles has apparently been dropped due to repeatedly turning up late for training, and he dropped Guendouzi for his poor attitude and apparently bad body language at their winter training.
Well, that's interesting. Well, I like that, because Arteta says that, you know, he responds to what he sees from players, and that isn't just on the pitch, it's their attitude around the place. And let's be honest, Arsenal have had a problem for a long time with just the manner of the defeats they have and the attitude that they take into games. Not always, but sometimes. And one of the things that I was saying before the Olympiacos game was that I was hoping that it would be fairly, you know, straightforward, which obviously it wasn't. It was slightly calamitous, but we hadn't had a typical Arsenal calamity under Arteta until that point. And he seems a very serious guy, the sort of person that stops that kind of thing from happening. And I'm really hoping that this sort of thing will lead to that you don't have those, like, oh God, typical Arsenal own goal and are sending off in the last minute to lose a stupid game situations. And this is music to my ears, because those little details are how you eradicate that.
It's part of changing the DNA of the club, which is important. It's really important.
Which he will have seen Guardiola doing and doing still at Manchester.
And he's that type of personality himself, apparently. He was like that as a player as well.
It's important to... That's the biggest task that Arteta has, and still has when he's at Arsenal. They're not going to struggle to... Realistically, they're not going to struggle to sign players. They're not going to be short of money. They're never going to be anything other than the top half of the Premier League, realistically. Mm. So, you know, the devil's in the detail there, of course. It's a big difference for Arsenal to finish first than it is to finish eighth. But, I mean, ultimately, their challenges are they know that everything's in place if they want to go and get it. They just have to go and get it. And they haven't been able to do that because, in my opinion, and I know Jim shares his opinion, the DNA's not been right, because I would probably be a bit harsher than Jim. I would say they're a bunch of disgraceful excuse makers who don't do what they should do. And they don't do the basics right. And it's music to my ears to read that... Not because I particularly dislike Ainsley Maitland-Niles, I don't have an opinion on him either way, but if a player is going to turn up late and is not going to be holding himself up to the standard that needs to be done at the very top level, then he has to be punished for it.
To be honest, a player turning up late when he's lucky to be in that side and he's in a side because, you know, he's plugging a hole and he's playing out of his position, he should be delighted to be there. He should be doing absolutely everything to impress, and that's, you know, hopefully he'll learn from it. But Brighton are unbeaten against Arsenal in the last 4 Premier League meetings.
That's mad.
That's exactly the sort of thing that needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
So,
well, you think
that's a stat that tells you everything you need to know about what
indeed.
We're saying.
Yeah. But you think Brighton holding on against Wolves for a handy point in their last Premier League game? I mean, Wolves again should have won it, you know, amount of chances and whatnot. But Brighton, you know, they're quite dogged in defence. This and that stat you've just brought to the table, Jim, you look at this and you think, well, Brighton, this is the problem for Arsenal. Brighton will think, right, well, we know how to get our point against these, so let's make sure, actually, that if we get a chance, if you hit them on the break, you can get all three.
Brighton won at the Emirates this season, didn't they?
They did. They were very good as well.
Well, so there you are. So they know how to get a result against Arsenal.
Yeah. And although, that was last year, and Brighton, as we know, haven't won a game in 2020 so far. Mm. So,
well, perfect opportunity.
Yeah. Mm. They haven't won a game this decade, Jim. Yeah.
True.
Actually, a cheap laugh.
Liking your work.
Yeah.
All right, then. Let's have some emails with Jimmy C.
Marcus.
Naughty indeed. Hi guys, on Monday's pod you mentioned that Roy Keane would heavily judge you on your choice of chocolate bar, and you were absolutely correct. However, you suggested that he would be okay with a Yorkie bar. I must note that as a young lad, my parents took me on a tour of Old Trafford for my birthday. My surname is Keane and I'm Irish, hence the non-legitimate reason for supporting United. Great self-awareness. One of the things I remember the most, bizarrely, is that the tour guide, when telling us what snacks the Red Cafe stocked, made it clear that they specifically didn't stock Yorkie bars anymore, following the club's incredibly embarrassing defeat to York City in the League Cup the previous season. 3-0 at Old Trafford as well. Yeah. He also mentioned that they'd been banned from the club altogether, both at the stadium and the Cliff. I don't know whether Roy Keane supported this decision or not, but I thought you guys might like to know if you didn't already. My dad and I went back to Old Trafford a week later to watch a pre-season game against Inter, and at halftime got a burger and a Yorkie each from one of the food outlets. Admittedly, not the Red Cafe. Who knows? I just didn't want Roy Keane to come after you all. Keep up the good work, Christian in Rustington. Thank you, Christian, because
important.
It's very important that we get that on the record, isn't it, in case Roy Keane does come after us, because he might not be aware of us at the moment, but there is always a possibility that if we come onto his radar, you just don't know what will happen. So thank you for looking out for us in that sense. Now, I've got a controversial email here.
Oh, God.
That shed some new light on something happened last week. So I'm going to dive right in. Lads, Jake from Japan's lusty description sounded mightily familiar, and then I realised I've heard those same words in reference to another man, Bon Iver. Though these words unquestionably fit Marcus better than Justin Vernon, it seems that Jake has repurposed entries from the Bon Iver Erotic Stories, a niche but terrifically written Tumblr. Specifically, his tales of the Christmas market and the desire to grow old together. If Jake has plagiarised, shame. But if he's the original author and he's recycling his love, I'm sure I speak for the rest of Marcus's adoring fans when I say he deserves original prose. That's from Seth Putnam in Chicago, Marcus's number one fan.
Well,
so,
that's Seth.
I mean, I've had a look at the Bon Iver Erotic Stories, and there is indeed a Christmas market one. It looks slightly different, so it may have been co-opted. But Jake from Japan, get in touch, justify yourself.
So this is when he was talking about Luke and me putting my arms around Luke and all that.
You know what they say, talent borrows, genius steals. Well. And if you want to plagiarise on the Football Ramble, particularly on this show, come on in. The water's warm.
I like the sound of, I like the cut of Seth's jib.
What, because he's your number one fan?
Correct.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Would he vie with anyone else for that particular
moment? Yeah, I mean, an awful lot of people.
Is that up to him, or do you have to designate that yourself?
You know, state your claim.
Well, I think he's doing that.
Why? So. What has he done personally to bestow upon himself the title of Marcus Spurs' number one fan?
I'm thinking
like Jed in Alan Partridge. Has he got a tattoo of Marcus on his chest? It took 14 hours.
Very happy to
we'll
sign
see.
It.
Is there
we'll
any more
see.
Emails, Jim?
Yeah, there is one more.
Go for it.
And it slightly writes this wrong. I think it's an absolute travesty that you boys haven't had proper slash fiction written about you after over 12 years of service. It's time you guys get what you all truly deserve. Absolutely not. I found a neural network fanfic generator and wanted to share a few of the responses. It's a real shame that Pete isn't here for this, because he himself is part internet. Number one. Pete and Luke stared at each other lovingly from across the recording table. The sexual tension was unbearable, like overhearing a secret love affair. Luke broke it off. No, we're done here. I'm going home. What? Pete nodded. I thought we were going to do this together, you know? Yeah, Luke said. I thought we were going to do this for a while. What did you have in mind? Pete asked, walking over to a cabinet, eyeing his wife's play. Luke glanced at his watch. The dog. I'm going to have to head home. Okay. Luke dragged his girlfriend home. We got two more of these.
What's the name of this thing that generates these things?
It is a neural network fanfic generator.
That's
essentially
what Pete is.
Yeah.
We found one of those and put them on our show.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is really our chickens coming home to roost, isn't it? Number two, Marcus Speller was undressing, trying to be as sexy for the Euros as he could.
He knew that's really accurate.
I know, right? Get this. He knew England could bring it home. He just knew. An 11-minute hat-trick of heroes that ended with the breakthrough of Willian giving Brazil the lead. They were 3 minutes away from making history.
Heroes.
Then the unthinkable happened. Didier Drogba went down on a night when the Selecao had been pinged with a yellow card every second. When Neymar saw Drogba's head accidentally duck underneath him as he leapt to stop a header, Neymar looked to be haunted by a fallen opponent. The A-team felt Superman wasn't fit for purpose. And by the second half, that was exactly what?
Imagine if someone thought, yeah, I'm just going to give this podcast a go for the first time. I'll just flick through. Mm. And they hear that.
Some of it was written by algorithm.
What I mean is that some of our best stuff.
Yeah.
Got one more. You ready for it?
Yes.
Jim, Pete, Luke and Jim were all sitting in the tub. Jim, Pete, Luke and Jim were all sitting in the tub together as bros. Just hanging out, getting cozy with the boys. When Jim reached over to the side of the tub and grabbed a bath bomb and said, "It's about to get crazy." Every single one of the five of them started screaming. Then a thunderous noise and a flash of lightning, which left just a cloud of smoke and ash. Everyone was shocked and shocked again. "Did he throw one there?" Pete asked. "No," said Luke. "He threw a whole bomb. It was a nuclear bomb, and he didn't know it had gone off," said Jim. "He's a rich fool." That's the end. Right. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work, boys. Cheers, the Big Munch. So, don't know who that's from, but he signed it as the Big Munch.
The Big Munch.
Thanks, Munch. The Big.
Show.
All right, is that the end?
It sure is.
All right. I've no idea what happened there, ladies and gentlemen. Now it's time for a break.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. The Spurs were booted out of the Champions League by RB Leipzig. I mean, they're looking poorer and poorer under Mourinho, aren't they?
It's very strange, isn't it? Obviously, the injury crisis thing is huge. I mean, he did do that thing of saying that every player on Leipzig's bench would get in the Spurs team, which is odd. But it feels third season Mourinho, doesn't it?
Jimmy, like he said that May. It's May, not a manager, when they lost to Sevilla that time.
Yeah.
He's got a bit of a track record of saying that.
When they appointed him as manager, Spurs, a lot of people thought, what are they doing? And that question still seems relevant. And I know that the sort of jokes that, oh, you know, next season, no doubt he'll whip them into shape, and there'll be big horses in the title
little
race.
Little horse. Yeah. I forgot about the little horse.
Yeah. I also forgot about next season.
Yeah.
It's really brought Spurs back to their roots.
But there appears to be some kind of false argument, like, which has been manifested and sort of, you know, stuck out there by the media, which says that, you know, is Mourinho good or not? And it's like, well, you can have a number of situations that can all be true.
Yeah.
I mean, like the fact that Spurs went stale and their chickens have come home to roost because they haven't strengthened in the area as they should have done back when they famously didn't sign a single player. That can be true. Mm-hmm. The fact they've got a lot of key injuries can also be true. And I would suggest that they need to be looking at what's happening at the training ground there, because they seem to be picking up an awful lot of important ones. Mm. And thirdly, it can also be true, all at the same time, that Jose Mourinho has made some poor decisions and has been a bit shit. Mm. All these things can be the case.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think they probably all are the case. Yeah. And the result of that is what we're seeing now. So I don't think it's a case of whether you like Mourinho or not, or whether you still think he's good or not. I mean, we'll all have our opinion on that. But all those situations can be true at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. Mm.
Did you see some bloke in the press conference after the match?
That was weird.
Did you see that?
Really? I thought it was Duncan Castles.
It was a bit strange. He said to as Mourinho finished the press conference, he was sort of getting up and walking off. He started saying, "Oh, cheer up, it's going to be okay."
Hmm. Someone said that to Jose Mourinho.
Yeah, yeah. Mourinho turned around and went, "What?
What are you talking about?" Yeah.
Yeah, and he went, it's going to be okay. The season, it's going to be okay. Cheer up. And Mourinho's just like, "What?
Jose Mourinho."
Yeah, I think it was him. I think it must have been that guy.
He's a big Chelsea fan. He wouldn't be at Spurs.
No, he's a big Mourinho fan.
That's true, maybe.
You are a special one. But we're out of the Champions League. Whoa, whoa.
I did think from what I saw in the game, and I was actually at the first leg as well. Mm. That
just the first one, eh?
Yeah,
you're bald fraud.
Was on it the first leg? Yeah, yeah. I'm actually bald under all this hair. He looked like a man out of time, Like he looks so outdated, and you can bang the drum all you like about how he likes to play football a certain way and do it in a certain fashion that may not be fashionable. Well, yeah, Diego Simeone fucking does that, and it works as we've seen.
To be fair to Jose though, we've said this many times, but it remains true. Having Kane and Son out, could they be more of a hamstring? Like it's so difficult, but
he's not getting a performance out of the rest of them. That's
no,
the thing.
He's not.
If they were battling away and you know they go down fighting against Leipzig or they show a bit of something, but they're not showing anything.
What did you think Rio Ferdinand was talking about the criticism that he's putting on the players, affecting them. Do you think that's true?
Well, yeah, hanging players out to dry is usually not a good idea. But, I mean, Dele Alli spoke quite well after the game and said, I think Ferdinand made the point that the way Dele Alli was speaking, he said, that's what the manager should be saying. And he looks pretty desperate for Spurs.
Well, Alli said that the team had lost all confidence. Mm.
He's right. He looks...
And I don't know why we are making exceptions. Like, for the fact that they've got key players out. I mean, it happens. Yeah. These things happen.
Yeah, but it's effectively an entire area of the team, though, isn't it? And obviously it's on them to only have, like...
But you can still perform well without your key players. I mean, clearly...
Chelsea won 4-0 last weekend without their £55 million attacking midfield player, Christian Pulisic. Lampard's first choice striker, Tammy Abraham.
Oh, they're not as crucial as Kane and
N'Golo Kante was out, and Jorginho was out.
Yeah, but what I mean though is, and
Marco van Hinkel was out.
Yeah,
you know,
incredibly on loan.
But I suppose this is ignoring the fact that Troy Parrott exists, which seems harsh, but he's you know, quite
but no one's seen him play.
No, yeah. But the thing is,
but, I mean, he basically has no strikers. Like at all.
I think this is to miss the point. Is if they've got no strikers, or whatever, they can still go out there. They can still fight. They can still perform. They can still look motivated and interested. Mm. And if they come away and say, "Do you know what? You know, we tried, but unfortunately, we couldn't put the ball in there because we don't have." There's none of that. It's none of that. There's no confidence. There's no desire. There's no energy. Yeah. I think if Kane and Son were there, it wouldn't make that much of a difference.
I think energy is key. The energy is key because you know they were pulled all over the place. Now I know they've got problems at fullback. They've got problems defensively as well. This is a team at the end of its cycle. There's no question about that. And the cycle peaked when they got to the final of the Champions League. And Pochettino achieved some amazing things at Spurs, and no one is taking that away from him. But he also had a terrible sort of back end of his time there. He said some odd things in press conferences, and he shouldn't be lauded as some kind of genius because he's now gone because everyone's reputation improves in their absence. But Mourinho can still be doing more and he's not doing it. Yeah. And that's what I said at the top of all this. All these things are true. All of them are true at the same time, and it makes for a pretty heady brew. Mm. And Man United are in really good form, by the way.
It's a bad time to have the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer party bus coming into town.
Exactly.
I might park it in Spurs' party bus.
He presses the horn and it goes... and then Paul Pogba... Oh, he left it at the services.
But he's still tweeting about it.
Yeah,
Well, it'd be a good game, you'd imagine, in North London.
But do you think United will win that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I suspect they will.
I think they're going 3-1.
They're on such a good run, and Spurs do look bereft of confidence and also knackered, which isn't ideal, is it?
No, it's not ideal. Aston Villa are hosting Chelsea. Villa were gubbed 4-0 at Leicester this week. It is looking increasingly bleak for those villains.
It really is, isn't it? Because they've just got no momentum. And, you know, they lost 2-0 to Southampton and then 4-0 to Leicester in their last game. So the goals have dried up and they weren't particularly plentiful anyway. I think this might be a a fairly routine win for Chelsea, which isn't something we've been able to say much this season because they've had a lot of blips. I remember when Olivier Giroud was at Arsenal, he used to absolutely love playing against Villa. And I wonder if the form he's in will mean he gets a start and does his thing.
Yeah, well, with Chelsea, I mean, off the back of that 4-0 win that we mentioned against Everton, you know, if you're Lampard, you're thinking, we have to lock down fourth position. Because if they finish fourth, I think, all in all, bearing in mind what Liverpool have done, or Manchester City's you know, still a great side, you know, they got to into the knockouts of the Champions League.
I think that fourth is a great season. I remember us all saying that at the start of the season, so we have to stick with that.
So they've got to lock it down now, haven't they? Because they're on the home straight, might be slightly premature, but there's not that many games left. Manchester United have been beginning to pick up points.
Well, you think Leicester will still win the title, right?
Well, if it's mathematically possible, which I don't know if it is for them.
Don't think
so. You know, these are the games where Lampard will be thinking, right, no pissing around, lads, let's have them. And that is exactly what Villa do not want, because Villa, they are on their way to relegation by the way the things are
going. Can I ask a potentially sort of fiery question? How is Dean Smith still in the job? Is it because he got them promoted and he supports them?
Is he not a big Villa fan?
Yeah, but so what?
Yeah, well, you know.
Maybe that genuinely is part of it, because it's a bit sad if you sack him. They must have faith in him, I assume. It's a good question, though. He'd certainly be a candidate, wouldn't he?
Against Leicester, they were so bad.
Yeah, they were.
It was a real kind of, we're still disappointed that we didn't win the League Cup type performance.
Do you think it's too late to sack him then?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Nine games left. They're not out of touch.
Maybe it was the cup final. Maybe having the carrot of the cup final means they've missed the window of potentially, obviously this is all speculative, but of bringing somebody in who has then got time to turn it around enough to give them a run.
Well, they're 2 points from safety with a game in hand, so it's not like they're completely without hope.
It's looking bleaker and bleaker.
But I'll be interested to hear from Aston Villa fans if they think that if it wasn't Dean Smith, would he have lost his job? I mean, they've not been great. Don't they have the worst defence in the Premier League? I think they do.
But the only side down there have twisted are Watford, and it's looking like it may work out for them.
They twisted twice
with old Pearson. But as they do,
I mean, you can't.
Let's twist again like we did last month.
The thing is that they seem to have a few problems off the pitch as well. Drinkwater's having an absolute mare. What's going on with him? He's been sent home from the training ground after fighting.
That is not an ex-player that would be coming home to haunt his team. But he's on loan from Chelsea anyway, isn't he? So he wouldn't be eligible through the rules/form.
Isn't he?
How many reasons do you want why we're not going to pick Danny Drinkwater against Chelsea? Apparently, he is available. Apparently,
all right.
But I need to double check that.
Do you think Chelsea did that on purpose? You know, you can play him against us.
And what's more, we think you should.
Yeah, we've actually got it written in the contract that he must play against us.
So, and Danny Drinkwater's agent goes, "Sorry, you've made a mistake there."
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
He's hurt us.
Yeah. Oh, no, apparently he is unavailable. He is unavailable.
Ineligible
to play his parent club. All right, let's do Betway's Four to Score then.
Let's do it.
Each week we participate in Four to Score with Betway, of course, for a chance to win a huge prize for charity. Entry is free. All you must do is pick the first goal scorer in Betway's four selected matches each round. If you're correct, you can win up to £75,000 this week. Make sure your selections are submitted before the first game, and further T's and C's apply. The first game normally goes to Jim. In fact, it always goes to Jim. And the first game this week is Newcastle United versus Sheffield United.
I, perhaps controversially, have once again gone for nobody to score.
Oh, nice. No goal scorer. Yeah. That's an option. You can do it if you want.
Exactly. Because Newcastle have been surprisingly good at shutting teams out, actually. And Sheffield United don't score a huge amount of goals. And I just, you know, when you're looking through the squads and you're thinking, I don't fancy any of these guys.
Great. No explanation needed, Jim. It's your decision to make. Uh-huh. Pete's got Aston Villa v Chelsea. I've given him Olivier Giroud.
Did he say Danny Drinkwater?
No, he didn't say anything. For precisely the reasons that Jim mentioned earlier. And I do think he will play. So for the game, Villa v Chelsea, which we talked about earlier, Olivier Giroud is Pete's pick. My pick for game three is West Ham v Wolves. I've gone for Ruben Neves.
What are you doing?
I know.
No, I like it. It's that pick is a speculative shot from 30 yards, which if Neves scores, is what the goal will be.
The annoying thing is Raul Jimenez will now score the first goal.
Well,
But obviously, if you
know, we learn, or will Raul Jimenez?
Yeah,
I think it'll be us.
Listen, Raul, if you're listening, stay the fucking out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Marcus, you've got Spurs v Man United, aka the big one.
Anthony Martial.
Okay, so that is no goal scorer in the first game. Olivier Giroud, Ruben Neves, and Anthony Martial. Betway's forward score is free to play. Just pick your first goal scorer from the four selected games for a chance to win up to £75,000 this week. You must be over the age of 18 to gamble, and do gamble responsibly, and bet the responsible way. For more information, go to begambleaware.org.
Lovely old job. And now it's time for Luke's game.
Now it's time for Luke's game.
Yeah, there we go. That can only mean one thing. It's not the masked winger. Everyone will be turned off by now, I expect, because I love the masked winger so much.
No, this is a good one.
It's Luke's game. I give you a player. You have to auction for how many of his clubs you can name. If you get the most, you win the point. If you get one wrong, you lose the point. It'll become clear if you've not heard it before. Okay, there are five players. We're going to rattle through them, though, because we need to be quicker. The first player, his nickname was The Ghost. He famously glassed himself in a nightclub. It's a current Championship manager. It's Jonathan Woodgate.
Jonathan Wooders.
He's played for a total of six clubs. How many can you name, Marcus Speller?
Five.
Well, you can name five. Jim, you can either go six or you can tell them to name them.
Ooh. I'm going to go name them. Okay. I reckon I could do five. I'm not sure about six.
You need to name five, Marcus.
Stoke City.
Correct.
Newcastle United.
Correct.
Middlesbrough.
Correct.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Correct.
Leeds United.
Correct.
Oh,
you even need Real Madrid.
Out Real Madrid.
Yeah,
you could have done all of them.
I should have done all of them.
That's a point to you, Marcus.
Very good, Marcus.
All right, next up, Jim, you get to auction first this time. You get to bid first. Next up, he runs the length of the pitch to taunt fans. He's won a surprisingly small amount of trophies for such
Emmanuel
a long career.
Emmanuel Adebayor.
Yeah, quite clearly, yeah.
He's played for 10 different clubs
in total.
And he's still playing, bless him.
Yeah, bless him.
Got sent off this weekend.
He did.
Or this midweek, yeah.
Oh, that was awful.
It's a flying kick in the head.
My goodness. I don't know who it was for, though.
Yeah. I almost told you which region it was in.
Tell you what, this game is a real insight into what happens to your memory if you do drink or you don't drink.
Yeah. Charlie said to us, me and Pete, the other week, I'll give you two a go at it. And he said, I just want to check, I haven't got one in. No, I haven't. He said, Ronaldinho. It was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Okay. So 10 clubs, did you say?
Yeah. I need to hurry you for a bid, Jim.
All right, I can do five.
Five. I'll go six.
Jim, interested in seven?
No.
All right.
No, I am not.
Marcus, you need to name six clubs that Emmanuel Adebayor played for. Go.
Arsenal.
That is correct. Sorry, just moving the chair. Yeah, correct.
Crystal Palace.
Correct.
Manchester City.
Correct.
Real Madrid.
Correct.
Istanbul, Basaksehir.
Correct.
Oh,
so another point for you, mate.
And a part of me is thinking, no. Another part of me is thinking, he did. Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
So it was Mets, Monaco, Arsenal, Man City, Real Madrid on loan, Spurs, Crystal Palace, Basaksehir, Kayserispor, and he's currently at Olympia in Paraguay, where he's got sent off.
Yeah, that's right. We spoke about he's playing up front with Roque Santa Cruz.
Oh, is he?
Yes. That's right.
That.
Yeah.
All right, so the third player is...
I got the point anyway.
Marcus, you get to go first this time.
Damn right.
It's the man with a position named after him. It's Sean Gregan. No, it's Claude Makélélé, whose job, by the way, currently is listed as technical mentor at Chelsea.
Really?
He's played for a total of six clubs, Marcus. How many can you name?
Two? I could name three.
Jim?
I think I could do three as well.
I suddenly thought about it. Well, I got two. I was like, bloody...
One would absolutely be a guess.
Yeah, that's the name of the game, isn't it, mate?
Yeah. I'll go four.
All right, Jim. Sorry, Marcus.
Name them.
Okay, yeah. Four clubs, Jim, of a total of six that Claude Makélélé's played for.
Obviously, Real Madrid.
Correct.
Chelsea.
Correct.
Believe he was at PSG.
Correct.
Yeah, they were the ones I was sure of.
Yeah. Okay, so after that, this is a bit tough now. I can't remember he went after Chelsea, or even if he did go anywhere after Chelsea. Maybe he retired
there.
It
was not PSG after Chelsea.
I thought it was before them. Before Madrid, rather.
I'm not giving you any.
I'm going to go Al Ahly.
Incorrect. So Marcus gets the point. It could be a washout, this. 3-0 to Marcus. So he started at Nantes.
Yeah, okay.
Then he went to Marseille. Then Celta Vigo. Then Real Madrid. Then Chelsea. Then he finished at PSG. Yeah.
Celta Vigo?
It's 3-0 to Marcus. You've won, but there's pride to play for, Jim.
Yeah.
Penultimately, it's a defender who, despite his legs literally going in about 2012, is miraculously still playing professional football at the age of 37. It's the 11 club strong Tal Ben-Haim.
Oh my goodness.
11 for Tal Ben-Haim.
God.
Jim, you go first.
3.
Okay. A conservative early.
4. Number.
Jim, do you want 5?
No.
Okay.
No,
4 clubs that Tal Ben-Haim has played for, Marcus.
Portsmouth.
Correct.
Chelsea.
Correct.
Maccabi Tel Aviv.
Correct.
Nice.
Played for them twice.
Did you play for Glasgow Rangers?
Incorrect.
Jim, you get QPR point. Was the other one I thought.
QPR played for.
Well, did he play for Fulham as well?
No, I'll tell you who he played for. You've got the point, Jim. Safe in the bag. Maccabi Tel Aviv, Bolton, Chelsea, Man City, Sunderland, Portsmouth, West Ham, QPR, Standard Liège, Charlton Athletic, Maccabi Tel Aviv again, and then he's now currently at Beitar Jerusalem.
He's more of a journeyman.
To be fair, that's very, I was thinking I've already won that. I've took the foot off the gas.
Yeah.
That's very poor of me. It's because Bolton and a lot of others in there.
I like that Marcus gets genuinely quite worried that people are going to judge him for his football knowledge mistakes. But you're 3-1 up. You're home and hosed.
Indeed,
I am. There's one more player left to name or to guess around. Last but no means least, a real litmus test for whether people know anything about football or not. That's right. From about 2004 until 2018, you could just ask, do you think Michael Carrick is a good player?
Oh.
And he's played for just 5 clubs. And Marcus, I think you're first. Or was it you first, Jim? I can't remember.
Jim won that one.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I started with you, so it must be you again.
Okay.
5 clubs for Michael Carrick. So everyone can name the big 3.
Yep.
The beauty about this one is there's 2 little loan spells.
Yeah. I know, yeah.
So how many can you name? Presumably 3.
3.
Jim, would you like to guess at one of the loan clubs?
No. Well, actually, I've got to, haven't I?
Yeah. Of course
you
do.
Annoying. You've snookered me there. All right, yeah, I will.
4.
You're going to go 4.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So West Ham,
yeah.
Spurs,
yeah.
Man United.
Those boxes are ticked.
Yeah, those boxes are well and truly ticked. Rangers.
No.
Incorrect. So Marcus gets the point.
Would it be like sort of a standard Liège or a Belgian side?
No, it wasn't. Although I understand why you guessed that.
Okay.
But it wasn't. The 2 loan spells he had were at Swindon Town.
I was honestly going to guess that. That is infuriating.
Well, you'd have nearly lost 3-2 instead of 4-1.
And it was Birmingham City.
Yeah.
But he played 8 times in the league in total at both those clubs, so you can be forgiven for not knowing that. Marcus, you are crowned the winner
once again
of this week's Luke's Game. 4-1.
Lovely.
A great victory for you. Well done.
Bit disappointed I conceded 1 there, but well, there we are. Yeah.
What can you do?
You know, Invincibles, baby. Only one man can say that. Thank you very much for listening to the preview show on Football Ramble Daily, sponsored by Betway. It's been a bloody pleasure. Thank you, Luke Moore.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim Campbell.
Thank you.
And do check out Greatest Games tomorrow with myself and Jonathan Wilson. See you soon.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.